This Week in HPC by Intersect 360 Research, distributed by Inside HPC.
High Frequency HPC.
And Japanese Space Agency preps for petaflops.
It's This Week in HPC. Hi, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of This Week in HPC by Intersect 360 Research and published by our friends at Inside HPC. I'm Addison Snell, joined again by Michael Feldman. How's it going, Michael?
Very well, very well.
You've been on the road quite a bit. I think you just made it home, huh? Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it was a long trip, but very, very interesting one, very useful.
We're going to hear about how that wrapped up. It's been a busy week for us at Intersect 360 Research as well. This week we published our new budget map research on the end user side, where end users tell us how they divide up their budget in different categories, looking at the cloud spending in particular very carefully. And our clients and HPC 500 members can download that from our website. We also saw the publication of our Lustre annual report together with OpenSFS, and that was published at LUG this week and is available for download with registration at opensfs.org. But Michael, you were on the road during all that, especially early this week in New York.
Yeah, it was just actually one day there for the one-day high-performance computing Linux for Wall Street event, which takes place every year about this time. Yeah, it was a very interesting event, as it always is. A lot of exhibitors there and a lot of interesting sessions and talks going on.
Well, anything in particular jump out as a theme? I like that conference. I'm sorry I wasn't able to go myself this year, but glad you were covering it for us. What were some of the big themes?
Well, the big theme this year seemed to focus on trading, not just high-frequency trading, which has sort of been in the news lately, but just trading across the board, whether it's high-frequency or more, you know, long-term and real-time trading as well.
You know, it seems like trading dominates the conversation there. For me personally, I find the risk management stuff a little interesting, more interesting, larger, faster growing, but it seems like they feel safer talking about the trading, and certainly there's a huge ROI involved in getting the latency down in those transactions.
Yeah, and in fact, some of the risk management is starting to blend into that. What they want to do these days is actually do some of that risk analysis and key, you know, real-time or near real-time trades off of that. So some of it is about, you know, sort of blending the big data with the HPC and getting some real-time turnaround, and it's still, you know, it's very latency sensitive and very compute intensive as well.
Right. This is kind of like where we used to hear about multiphysics starting to creep in on the engineering side, where you wanted to simultaneously solve your noise, vibration, and harshness together with your structural, together with your crash, and create one big boss model that did all of those. Now we're bringing that multiphysics concept into a multi-algorithmic concept, multi-optimization for finance.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot more intelligence going into these applications as well. I mean, there was an example of some of these front end applications actually doing some intelligence on press releases as they come out off the wire. One of it was you know, an announcement of an interest rate hike. Actually, it wasn't a hike; it was an interest rate staying the same, and the market basically reacted within 150 milliseconds of that thing going public. And obviously, there was a computer there doing that. I mean, it parsed enough of the keywords in that press release, determined what it meant, and then started making trades and bids on that value. So some of this is already going into production like that, and there's going to be more and more like that, where they're getting you know, this unstructured data input and hooking that into the trading infrastructure. So it's very interesting, and it's obviously it puts a lot of stress on the computing systems that need to do this, because there's a lot more intelligence that needs to be done.
Any Michael Lewis fans out there at this conference?
Hey, not many. Yeah, good you mentioned that. the book, Michael Lewis's book, Flash Boys, came out just before this conference started. That book is a very critical look at the trading the trading structure in Wall Street, especially high-frequency trading. And a lot of the people did mention that in sort of preface to their talks. And there was a lot of criticism of Michael Lewis's book. But it was an interesting topic of conversation, as always, since high-frequency trading tends to be a sort of a controversial application in the world of HPC.
It is controversial. You know, I haven't read Flash Boys yet. It's on my list. Well, maybe we'll have to come back and do a little book club review of it on a future podcast. You and I, going back to years ago with the flash crash that happened, you and I have been critical about high-frequency trading in the past on this podcast, or a previous podcast, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit mysterious how it's done, and I think some of the companies that do this do it a little more nefariously than others. Now, of course, front running, the getting in front of certain types of trades is not legal, but it's harder to control in these applications that they're doing high frequency trading, because everything's, of course, fractions of a second, and you've got different levels of traders in there. You've got institutional traders, you've got retail traders, and then you've got these high frequency traders that are sort of, you know, making the whole thing liquid. So some of these people probably are sort of stretching the boundaries of what might or might not be legal. And I think the book, even though it might not be completely accurate on some of the criticisms, I think is going to attract the attention of the SEC and perhaps some prosecutors to look into what these guys are doing.
Sounds like it at least got the attention of the people who are actually doing these applications in the near term. And it's worth saying that we certainly track this finance market as in our vertical markets. It's the largest commercial vertical market in all of HPC, slightly bigger than manufacturing and faster growing.
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is growing fast. You can tell that just by, you know, sort of the breadth of applications there. The other thing I should mention, I mean, it's not just growing in the U.S. Mention was made that these trading applications, high frequency trading and otherwise, were making their way internationally, and they were growing there very rapidly in Europe and Asia and some other geographies as well. So this Wall Street technology and application set is being exported and growing rapidly worldwide.
Well, to be sure, finance is not only a U.S. market, and we see a lot of HPC and finance in other areas, in England, in Japan. There's a lot of it, and maybe we should take a quick break. We've got another Japan story, so I can use that as our segue. Let's get a quick sponsor break. We'll come back and do a little more Japanese HPC.
HPC users, become part of a growing community of leaders in the high-performance computing community by joining the HPC 500. Gain access to reports, data, and insights from Intersect 360 Research. Join or listen in to user panel discussions led by industry analysts on topics of interest. And steer the course of development in HPC by becoming an active survey participant. HPC 500, connecting HPC leaders. Join today at HPC500.com.
Okay, Michael, we're back in from our sponsor break. And also this week in HPC, we had some news coming out of Japan looking at their space agency, JAXA.
Yeah, JAXA, the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, Fujitsu, announced that they got an order from them for a new supercomputer system that looks like it'll be fully deployed at 2016, but it'll start to be deployed towards the end of this year, and that's going to be a big system. It's going to be over 3 petaflops.
Yeah, this is something where we see these big supercomputers going in the national space exploration agencies. Obviously, NASA, especially at NASA Ames, is a big HPC consumer in the U.S. INPEI in Brazil has the largest supercomputer in all of Latin America, and JAXA now upgrading into the multi-petaflop range.
Yeah, and I think they intend to use it for their numerical simulation technology and their data analysis there, especially as it relates to satellite imaging. Right now, I guess they have, you know, a lot of these imaging applications going on, but it takes them, with their current computer, it takes them sometimes several months to process these images. So this new system is something like 20 or 24 times, it's going to be 20 or 24 times faster. is going to streamline that quite a bit, and I'm sure they're looking forward to that.
Meanwhile, this is more good news for Fujitsu, who seems to keep hitting a lot of big sales. You know, we don't see them a lot in the U.S., but not only in Japan, but in Asia and Europe, Fujitsu really getting a lot of key deployments.
Yeah, and especially this one. This will be quite big. And in fact, this is one of their future systems. It's not the FX10, the Prime HPC FX10, which is what they currently have in the field. It's going to be the follow-on to that, whatever that's called, down the road. But it's coming up actually rather soon, since by the end of this year, they're going to have the first piece of that. So, yeah, Fujitsu's been doing well with that Prime HPC platform, which is the one that's based on their Spark, and it's presumably will have the next generation Spark. But the most interesting part of this, I think, to a lot of people is going to be the first supercomputer that Fujitsu's put out, maybe anybody's put out, that will have the Micron 3D memory technology, the so-called hybrid memory cube technology that we've talked about. And
we have talked about it. We're hearing more and more about Micron as time goes on, especially on this memory side.
Yeah, I mean, they've been developing the hybrid memory cube technology for a few years now, and it looks like it's going to be ready for prime time towards the end of this year, in time for this system. And there might be, who knows, there might be other systems as well. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, how much memory they're going to get, and how it's installed in this new system. I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Me as well. And, you know, that's going to be a key technology potentially as we march on to exascale. I think we've all got to have our eyes on Japan and whether they're going to have the first exascale system, probably not at JAXA, but elsewhere in Japan and with those national initiatives. So here's another multi-petaflop machine going in. Meanwhile, I think a semi-related story, although you know, not directly related, but the same idea of this race to exascale outside of the U.S. Also this week in HPC, we saw a collaboration, or I should say a potential collaboration between Russia and India to put a supercomputer in Bangalore that both sides say the intention would be to rival the lead that China has built with Tianhe 2.
Yeah, that I saw too. That's a very interesting pairing there. And I think actually it makes a lot of sense when you consider sort of the economics and the geographies going on. I mean, China sort of raced ahead of those two nations. I mean, India had the idea that they would be a leadership country for a while in putting these big leading edge systems together, and Russia as well. But you know, China basically outmuscled them and outspent them and got these, you know, these number one and number two systems out there in short order. But the pairing actually makes a good deal of sense. And I think, yeah, these collaborations where, you know, multiple countries are coming together to build these really extreme systems, I think we're going to see more of.
We should say that this is from a report that was initially published in Economic Times, and it quite rightfully pointed out that what India can contribute is a significant amount of expertise in software. You're right, Michael, that India previously had aspirations of being on top of the supercomputing market. If you go back to 2007, Tata, which is one of the major multinational conglomerates of the world, had entered the supercomputer race and had a top five supercomputer that they had built in India. But since then, they haven't had that same level of national commitment to supercomputing, at least not on the hardware side. So now to be able to partner with Russia, and they're looking at RSC Systems, which is a company that we've talked about many times before, and recently with them upgrading their density from petaflop in Iraq up to 1.2 petaflops in Iraq. If Russia is putting up hardware, India is putting up money and software, you know, they could put up a pretty big supercomputer. I don't think they're going to overtake the Chinese and Tianhe 2 in the immediate term. I don't think they really think they're going to, but they're going to put up a machine that's going to be up there. And if you look ahead a couple generations, the race to exascale, I think there's a question of is India, through this partnership with Russia, really declaring itself to be part of that race?
Yeah, I think with, you know, looking at, you know, sort of the size of just the economies of India and Russia together and sort of their aspirations and their technical know-how, it does make sense for that collaboration to go forward. Not that that's inked yet, but I think if it is, they do have a good shot at becoming one of the leading sort of geographies or axis of supercomputing. I think we're seeing, of course, the EU comes together and they're going to come out with their exascale project, and of course China's sort of a standalone thing. Japan is a relatively small economy compared to some of these others, but they are putting a huge investment in it, but they're sort of alone in that sense. I mean, the U.S., of course, is a much larger economy, and we're even taking it much more methodically. So there is sort of an opportunity now for these other countries to come in and grab one of the rings here.
It's very interesting. We've talked before about where we think the first exascale system would be. We never talked about Russia or India as a real leader here. What are the odds, you think, that we get, because of this, the first exascale systems in India?
Well, I think still the odds are rather low. I mean, there's such a long way to go, even with Russian help, unless they both sort of up the ante in the investments. I think it's
I wouldn't make them the favorite. I wouldn't make them my favorites either. I had long shot. I don't think it's as long as it once was. I'd put it at 12 to 1.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds fair. Yeah, I mean, both countries obviously are very interested in technology. They want to be there. They want to have that cachet in the supercomputing industry. But it's a long way, even to catch up, which was their initial goal, just to catch up to the Chinese, what they're doing today, and then presumably at some point keep pace with them and maybe overtake them. That's a tall order.
Well, Michael, thanks for the report from New York and helping me with the worldwide look at supercomputing. That'll wrap it up for this week. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. This has been This Week in HPC.
You've been listening to This Week in HPC, brought to you by Intersect 360 Research, actionable market intelligence for high-performance computing, distributed by Inside HPC, news without noise for the high-performance computing professional. For more information, visit intersect360.com and insidehpc.com.